So next file works part of this Camps to Plunk mission. Top page 65 in the old index, which is printed on the PDF file. The pause this time was much longer. The pull on the glass much more lingering. Although I was dying to ask him any moment or questions, yet I refrained from doing so. It is considered bad manners in this part of the world to be too inquisitive, and yet people do open up when they have spent several months in solitude. They are in need of conversation. If the guide wanted to confide in me, then he would. But in his own good time. Meanwhile, I was content to sit and think over the implications of the story of this attack of fear out there in the jungle by the Yavari River, and how he had been cured by the white man who had turned native. I think you're like me, the Australian finally said, putting aside his empty glass. You're probably the spice as much as I do with narrowness of your own hometown. In your towns and villages, a son is expected to follow the same occupation as his father. My father was a musician. He played in the Vienna State Orchestra, so he must have been pretty good. So I have to become a musician. When I was only 6 years old, I was forced to learn the violin. Twice a week, the professor came to our house in Innsbruck. In the late afternoon, the school was finished for the day. I hated that man. Other kids could play football in the street, but I was forced to listen to the most dreadful noises you can imagine, produced by me against my will on an instrument I found was becoming more and more repugnant to me. And to think my father put that violin under the Christmas tree. Imagine a boy of six being landed with a violin when he'd been dreaming of a football. I nodded my head in sympathy. I couldn't well imagine the anguish of a football man 6 years old. People in South America are not like the burgenous Europeans. Here they do what they want to do, not what their parents want them to do. It doesn't matter a great deal whether or not they're making a lot of money. They're just happy doing what comes naturally, and they're proud of doing it. Look at me for an example. I'm importing hardware by plane from Lima. I sell it downriver on credit. It isn't easy. When my customers see my boat coming, they disappear into the jungle instead of paying me in rubber or with money. But in the end, I get paid because we are all friends. It's a happy-go-lucky life. Most people in South America are like me. Think of the Brazilians in Rio. They really are a happy lot. They've got the finest harbor in all the world. What a place to see at night from the cable car. What wonderful avenues, what luxury hostels and shops. And they are courteous all the time. If you compare that with the rat race in Europe and in the United States, if you remember how the people who live there often have to dig themselves out of the snow and ice, then you begin to appreciate that here in South America people really are living. They live in paradise on earth. It's unhygienic, of course, but people here just don't vegetate from one workday to the next. They're really swinging. That's how I feel about living in South America. Swinging in the sun. That's for me. At last, the Australian had come to the end of his philosophing. He got up to go, a contented man, because he had got things off his chest, and he had passed a comfortable hour drinking with me, incidentally at my expense. I thought that I had time, had listened long enough to ask a question or two, so I detained him with yet another refill of his glass. That was something like an adventure in the Yavari River, I remarked. Have you had any other adventures like that? Any with animals perhaps? My intention was to draw him out into revealing more details about the crazy white man who had turned native because of the painkilling tablets he had received. There was little doubt in my own mind that he had perhaps encountered some people similar to Satura. But the Australian guide had exhausted that subject. I've had many adventures, he admitted. Why? I had one the first week of arriving out there. I was only a youngster of 18 or so. I told you, I couldn't wait to leave Australia and my family. It was the Christmas of 1946. I was in the Eucali country then. I had my base at Pucallpa, Peru, and was just beginning to learn my trade. I had wandered down to the waterside. The river was in full spate, dirty, muddy, treacherous, and alive with piranhas. I was watching some native boys searching for turtle eggs. We were on a small beach, smooth and sandy. Suddenly, one of the boys shouted at the top of his voice. I thought he'd seen something big in the water. Then all the other lads started to make a fuss. They dashed into the water. They weren't in the water very long. They picked up something and came hurrying back, and I looked at what they found. It was a baby, a brown little baby girl. I was shocked. Who would do a thing like that? Of course, I hadn't heard about the little custom of the upstream Indians in the Ucayali country. If the family is hungry, if there is too many babies, then they throw the newborn girls into the river. Ironically, this tribe does not believe in killing, so they throw the live baby into the water, knowing that the fish will get her. After saving the little girl, those kids stood around looking at the baby. They weren't doing a thing about it. So I stepped in, picked up the baby and took it along to a Catholic mission in Pucallpa. I explained what had happened to the sisters and then took the baby in. They thanked me and invited me along to the christening. They arranged that right away. Instant christening in case the baby should die of exposure. Maria Navidad, they named the child. Maria for Mother of God. Navidad because she had found on Christmas Day. A remarkable story, I replied. As remarkable in its way as your story about the white natives. He wasn't to be drawn. I took that baby girl a few presents before I left poor Kalpa. A bonny kid she was. Do you know what happened to her? I asked. I laughed. Poor Kalpa the following summer. I wrote once a few years later. The sister told me they were educating her at a mission school near Lima. I lost touch after that. I'm not much of a letter writer. At any rate, this story has a happy ending. Only partly. The sisters told me the baby's mother had been beaten up by her own people. I understand the woman died soon after. Never heard her tell of her father. So Maria Navidad must be an orphan. But you left her in good hands. That was commendable of you. I don't want any medals. Any time you want to disappear into the jungle, just let me know. He left the hotel. He must have been a hardened drinker, and he had finished a bottle with gusto. I stayed at the bar for a longish time after he had gone. I didn't drink any more. I just wanted to think over the things he had told me. I had sensed that he had told people about his homeland. I had met many of them myself on my travels. Many of them northern people are desperate people with a host of complexes. He was also right, generally speaking, about South America. The climate did make a vast difference. Admittedly, he'd studiously refrained from mentioning the disgusting poverty of the peasant people and the filthy slums of Caracas, Lima, Bogotá, Rio, and the other major cities. His point was that as long as there is sunshine, the people are, in the main, happy. You rarely find a depressed, desperate person in the sunny South America states. There are people living there as poor as European slum dwellers, but the South American peasant accepts his poverty with a smile. Nor do they feel their poverty to be a personal disgrace with an accompanying psychopathic complex, as do the poor of a more northly countries. As a matter of interest, I had noticed that the majority of South Americans seem to work at a happy-go-lucky type of job. They work as fruit juice sellers, the beggars, strum guitars, they are the wandering tin can collectors, the shoeshine boys, the coconut and candy salesmen, the sellers of onions and rotten vegetables, the third-class meat salesmen, the travelers and representatives who try to get rid of carbon paper, cheap perfume, candlesticks, plastic flowers, cigarette lighters, and host of other junk. Then there are the repairers of fountains, pens, umbrellas, broken windows, and a host of other broken articles. There are sellers of lottery tickets, newspapers, and funny stories. There are revenders of theater, the cinema, and the other places of entertainment. There are the cattle minders and the dog watchers. There are the people with the 1,001 happy-go-lucky type jobs. There is simply no end.